Our study tonight is out of Philippians chapter 1, verses 12 through 18, as we get into continuing our start of the epistle to the Philippians. Nurture and resting in God's use of our earthly obstacles to advance His cause. When Paul wrote the prison epistles of Ephesians, Colossians, Philippians, and Philemon, the fact that he was in prison troubled believers. We know that from passages like Philippians chapter 1, 12 and 13, Colossians 2, 1 and 2, 4, 7 and 8, and Philemon verse 22. So to nurture his readers at Philippi, Paul wrote in Philippians chapter 1, 12 through 18, about God's encouraging use of even the human obstacles he faced to further the cause of Jesus Christ. And review that passage for our edification. I want to read the verses and then we'll look at them tonight. Philippians 1, 12 through 18. But I would you should understand, brethren, that the things which happened unto me have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel, so that my bonds in Christ are manifest in all the palace and in all other places. And many of the brethren in the Lord, waxing confident by my bonds, and much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ even of envy and strife, and some also of goodwill. The one preaches Christ of contention, not with sincerity, supposing to add affliction to my bonds, but the other of love, knowing that I am set for the defense of the gospel. But what then? Notwithstanding in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, and I therein do rejoice, yes, and I will rejoice. Paul's readers were apparently quite concerned about him, thinking that he was discouraged and that God's plan had gone awry in his imprisonment. This fact is gleaned from Philippians chapter 1, verse 12. You'll see where Paul says, I want you to understand that the things which have happened unto me have fallen out rather to the furtherance of the gospel. These people apparently were somewhat discouraged and set back, so Paul had to set an order and point out what God had done. This is something I have noticed on an absolutely consistent basis. You can take an event, especially when it's an event that deals with a church situation, whatnot, and it looks like it's a setback. But God always makes an advance out of it. He's always making progress out of it. He doesn't fail. He's always working to His glory. And that's what Paul wanted to address here. So he pointed out that even the godly believer's earthly obstacles are merely used of God to advance His cause in Jesus Christ. And this truth is explained in Paul's case in verses 12 through 18 as follows. When Paul wrote the Philippian epistle, he was imprisoned in Rome as a prisoner of the state. Philippians 1:13, we know this because Paul was mentioning the fact that he was writing in the Praetorium. The Praetorium was the Roman Imperial Guard, and that guard was stationed in the city of Rome. So that's another reason why we believe Paul was imprisoned in Rome at this time. The trial of his case had probably begun, and its outcome as to whether Paul would be freed to continue living or to be put to death was uncertain. And we get this from the fact that later on, and we don't cover that in the passage that's immediately in front of us, but if you skip down to verse 21 of the same chapter, Paul says, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. But if I live in the flesh, this is the fruit of my labor, yet what I want I shall choose, I don't know, because I'm in a strait," verse 23, "betwixt the two, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better," in verse 24, "nevertheless to abide in the flesh is more needful for you." So this was apparently a life and death situation. And Paul was actually very relaxed about it. You know, if I have to go to be with the Lord, that's far better for me. It's not better for you because you're going to need my ministry as an apostle and so forth. But this was a situation that normally would cause a lot of Christians, a lot of weak Christians, to be very, very afraid. Well, the trial of his case had probably already begun, according to Dr. Ryrie's footnote in Philippians 1:19, and its outcome as to whether Paul would be free to continue living or to be put to death was uncertain. And in addition to this personal human life crisis, Paul faced opposition by fellow professing Christians who should have been trying to encourage him rather than to discourage him. For example, Paul reported to his Philippian readers that some professing Christians preached the gospel of Christ out of envy and rivalry, with the motive of trying to make that preaching afflict Paul in his imprisonment, in that he was restricted from proclaiming Christ and gaining converts, while they were free to become more famous ministers and gain many more followers than Paul in his imprisonment. In verse 15, the first part, Paul says, some indeed preach Christ even of envy and strife, others of goodwill. And then verse 17, the other of love, knowing that I am set for the defense of the gospel. Verse 16, some preach Christ of contention, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my bonds. To them, the ministry is all about how many converts can you get. And they were in competition with Paul against converts, a very carnal way of looking at ministry. And it's sad, because here's Paul, he's restricted, he wants to be out doing the work of God, but he can't, he's bound up in this prison. Of course, for us, we're better off because of Paul's imprisonment, he had to write these letters. And so the church has been benefited tremendously because he was in prison. But from Paul's perspective at the time, that wasn't the case. As far as he knew, this letter was going just to the Philippians. Okay? And apparently to other Christians that they might circulate it with. But he had no idea it was going to be going on to generation after generations of Christians. And then, this motive, of course, was a false one. It was a carnal one. It was not a motive in sincerity as to God's glory. Nevertheless, Paul refused to fall for the temptation of either feeling faithless fear in his life-threatening case, or for the temptation to let human pride make him distressed over those who competed against him. And he did this by viewing his circumstances by faith from God's perspective so as to rest in God's agenda. This is a timeless lesson, extremely important. Paul actually sought to encourage his concerned readers about his circumstances by claiming that from God's viewpoint, his humanly negative imprisonment and opposition by carnal believers had instead, the Greek word is malon, which means to instead or rather, resulted in the advancement or the furtherance, prokope, of the gospel, verse 12, rather unto the advance of the gospel. It's interesting how many times this happens. When missionaries first went to China and they spent the gospel there under the China Inland Mission and so forth, the Chinese were very polytheistic. And they said, oh, Jesus Christ is God, sure. And they put him up on the table with all the other gods, and they had many other gods. Well, that really hindered the people from hearing the gospel. Well, what happened is God allowed the communists to come in, and the communists actually eradicated polytheism in China because they were anti every god. Well, the only belief then that would survive would be the true belief in Christianity, and it survived and it flourished. And millions of people came to know Jesus Christ. And today, there are actually maybe more Christians in China than there are in the United States. Isn't that wonderful? And they say the church is growing, I think, like 7,000 Christians a day are coming to Christ. And they have a big problem there because they don't have trained leaders to teach these people. In fact, the average pastor has an average of 2 to 4 weeks of training, formal training, that's it. And the people are there are hungry, but thankfully the internet is getting out there. People can get information out to them. But it's amazing how God went ahead and used communism as a vehicle to spread Christianity. Who would have thought? But nevertheless, God's purposes don't stop. They just keep going. Paul then explained that these problems had been used by God to further his own divine agenda. Paul reported that his witness to the prison guards had affected the whole praetorium. Now, the praetorium was the imperial guards. This consisted of 9,000 men who were distinct from the regular army and who were very influential with the emperor and whose members took shifts being chained to Paul and guarding him. The praetorium is something like our Green Beret. They're very highly trained soldiers. They're designed and they're equipped, or maybe like our SEALs. They're very specialists, high specialists, and they're trained. 50, 20, 20, 25 men can go into a situation and deal with many more numbers and control it. A lot of, I didn't know this, but a lot of Navy SEALs actually have their doctorates. They're very highly educated people, doctorates, master's degrees, and so forth. They're outstanding people, and it takes a tremendous amount of discipline in order to get into that. But that's what the Praetorium was. Now, what happened is Paul, being a prisoner in Rome, they didn't want to lose any prisoners, so what they did, they would chain one of these specialist soldiers to to the prisoner, and they took turns being chained. Well, when you get chained to Paul, you get witnessed. And they couldn't hurt him. I mean, he had to live and everything, so they had to listen to his witness. And he witnessed, and apparently he either led some of these men to the Lord, or the gospel was given to them, and these men, as they took turns with the shifts, they would go back to their barracks, and they would share the gospel. And pretty soon, all 9,000 men in the barracks there heard about it. Now, if these men heard about it, and they were highly influential with the emperor and everything, the emperor probably would have heard about it. And then there were the emperor's household and so forth. And there are other indications in the epistles that a number of the people of the emperor's family actually came to know Jesus Christ as their Savior, which is exciting. So Paul is just beside himself with joy because of what the Lord is doing. As soldier after soldier had been chained to Paul, and they had become a captive audience for his witness, and so these soldiers had taken the gospel back with them to the Praetorian barracks until all 9,000 men in the Imperial Guard knew the gospel, and with their influence, it caused it to spread greatly. You'll notice the last part of verse 13, not only in all the Praetorium, that's the word palace there, but in all the other places. See, these soldiers had contacts with the Senate and so forth all over the place. So these soldiers actually became unwitting missionaries. Isn't it amazing, the Lord using these Roman soldiers to be missionaries of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The spread of Paul's witness in this way readily emboldened many fellow Christians outside of prison to speak the word of the gospel without fear. Verse 14, and many of the brethren in the Lord, waxing confident by my bonds, are much bold to speak the word without fear. Now, some professing Christians out of carnal competitive motives tried to irritate Paul by taking advantage of his imprisonment and making converts where he was powerless to get to preach. But Paul simply rejoiced that the gospel was getting out, whether by good or bad motives. I think this is a wonderful attitude that Paul had in verse 16. Some preach Christ out of contention, not sincerely supposing to add affliction to my bonds, the other out of love, knowing that I'm set for the defense of the gospel. What then? What's my response to this? Notwithstanding, in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached. And therein I rejoice, and yea, I will rejoice. I mean, there are some people that they're trying to get it into my craw and make me feel bad because I'm not winning as many converts as them. I'm glad they're winning converts. He says, they're going to have to answer to the Lord for their attitude, but hey, the gospel's getting out. So Paul took a very selfless attitude. I mean, if his bonds is actually causing the ministry of the gospel to get out, he's in favor of it. He's not hurt by this at all. He was not concerned about feeding his ego and pride, nor was he concerned about whether his case led to his acquittal or to his execution, according to verse 21, but only that the fact that God's agenda was being fulfilled in his life. This is a wonderful attitude. The point is not whether my agenda, my goals are met. The point is God's agenda being done in my life? That's the only thing that should be of our concern. So the lesson is, Paul did not view his humanly negative circumstances and unbelief to get depressed or angry, but rejoiced in seeing by faith how God was furthering his agenda in his life. And Paul shared this view to edify other believers. So may we adopt God's view of life's human setbacks to see God's will as being fulfilled in them, and so replace the depression and fear of unbelief with the joy of a life of faith. May we then share this view to aid others. I have a personal testimony to share with us. I started to play the trumpet many years ago because there was a fellow at the Kent Academy where I went to the mission school who had tried to play O Holy Night and he couldn't get the high note. And I felt bad because he couldn't get the high note, kept trying in the program and so forth. So I said, I want to play the trumpet so I can hit that high note on O Holy Night. So I started to play the trumpet. I mean, I was 11 years of age, 6th grade, somewhere in there. So I picked up the trumpet and started to play it and became fairly proficient at it. And then one night I slipped on a bar of soap when I was in the showers as a boy at Kent Academy, fell down and broke one of my front two teeth. And it abscessed, which means it became infected and they had to pull it. And in its place, while I was growing up, because my mouth was constantly changing, until I got to the age of 12, they had to put a bridge. And with the bridge there was a plate. And then, anyway, I had to learn how to play the trumpet all over again. And that was very discouraging because
all my friends, they were going along, they were advancing. So I had to learn to play this thing all over again. They put the bridge in. And then when I became 12 years of age, they took the bridge out, and then they had to put a permanent one, which connected to this other tooth. But then I had to learn how to play the trumpet again, because without the bridge, you can't do this. And it was a crushing experience. And my mom and dad had never wanted us to quit. But they said, in this situation, this is so difficult. If you want to quit, you can. One of the missionary ladies, who was fairly knowledgeable about music, told my mother that I may never play the trumpet again. Because, you know, learning how to play with these different embouchures, there's the way you hold the lips, and you have to hold it differently for the different shape of the mouth and so forth. So this is the third time I'm going to have to learn how to redo this thing. But I decided I wouldn't give up, but I would just stay at it. And there were many tearful practices where I would try to play, and it was just so frustrating, but I didn't want to give up. And so I just made it a commitment to the Lord. I had accepted Jesus as my Savior at the time, so I did. And eventually I learned how to play again. But through the process of having to try to play, I learned to play with more feeling than I would have if I hadn't played, if I hadn't had these difficulties, because all of the anxiety, all the grief, all the disappointment, I was able to convert into the music and play it that way. And that made a difference. And so the Lord, in his own way, was using that in my life in order to make me play better than if I had never had that. So I learned from that that when we face obstacles, and when we face discouragements, and often repeat discouragements and grief in our lives, and you just feel like quitting, you know, it's just overwhelming, what you need to do is to stay at it, because God is at work perfecting in us a greater level of maturity so that we can be better used of the Lord. So may we adopt God's view of life's human setbacks, see God's will as being fulfilled in them, and replace the depression and the fear of unbelief with joy of a life of faith. And may we then share this view to aid others.